So I also call to the podium now Mr. Andrei Forsov, who will speak to us first on the current world crisis, its social nature and challenge to social science. Mr. Forsov is a historian. He comes from the Institute of Scientific Information on Social Sciences of the Russian Academy of Sciences, and he is also a member of the ISBOS Club from Russia. And then please, Antonella Barnaudi, whom we had the pleasure of hearing yesterday evening already with a beautiful Verdi arias. Please come also to the podium. And then Liliana Gorini, the chairwoman of Movimento Solidarietà Italy, and John Sigerson, the Schiller Institute music director from the United States. Please come here.
Dear colleagues, first of all, I would like to express my gratitude to the organizers of the conference who invited me to speak here. I would like to start my talk with quotation from the quintessential British imperialist Winston Churchill, who in the year 1940 wrote in a letter that Great Britain was fighting not against Hitler and not even against National Socialism, but against the spirit of German people, against the spirit of Schiller, so that this spirit would never reborn. But now we are here at the conference, which is organized by Schiller Institute, and it is a kind of our asymmetrical answer to British Empire. I understand that everybody is tired, and this is our last panel, so I would like not to be too long. Crisis became a code word of our time, even banality, but the question is crisis of what? And we are told that it is a crisis of finance, it is a crisis of state, it is a crisis of education, so it is a crisis of everything. But what does it mean, crisis of everything? Crisis of everything means systemic crisis. It is a crisis of the social system, and this social system is capitalism. So first, crisis of capitalism, and only second, crisis of civilization, mankind. But what is capitalism? This is a strange question. Descartes used to say, il faut définir le sens des mots, define the sense of the words. So my working definition is that capitalism is a complicated institutional system which limits capital in its own long-term and holistic interests and ensures expansion in space, externalizing crisis and exploitation. The last one is vital because capitalism, like antiquity, like slave system, is extensively oriented system. When in the course of evolution of capitalism, global rate of profit was diminishing, capital used to carve out parts of non-capitalist zones and transformed it or them into capitalist periphery, the zone of raw materials extraction and that of cheap labor. But in 1991, with the fall of the socialist camp, including the USSR, and with the start of semi-gangster type of capitalism in Russia, non-capitalist zones evaporated. Now capitalism is everywhere. It encompassed all the world, the globe, complete victory. But every acquisition is a loss. Now there is no place to expand. Intensification of capitalism is on the agenda. But the problem is that capitalism is extensively constructed system in principle. Several institutions, nation state, civil society, politics, and mass education limit capital's possibility to exploit the core of the system, the way and at the scale it does in the periphery. The institution I have mentioned externalized exploitation somewhat compared to the way Solon's reforms did in ancient Athens. I do not want to minimize the level of exploitation in the so-called highly developed countries, but there is a certain limit to it, or to be more precise, it was in 1945-1975. It is no coincidence that the French call this period Les Trente Glorieuses, glorious 30 years. I say was because since the 1980s, the dominant groups of capitalist class has been dismantling these protective institutions, the sum or rather the system of which constitutes normal and sound capitalism or its pillars. During the last 30 years, we have been witnessing fading away of nation state, squeezing of civil society, depolitization of political sphere, and deliberate primitivization and weakening of mass education, including the higher one. In America, this process took place in the 70s and in the 80s. In Russia, we are witnessing it now. But thanks to socialist bases, those who are trying to demolish our education, they succeed, but only partly. This liquidation is the essence of the so-called neoliberal revolution, or rather counter-revolution, counter not only to the main tendencies of the last of the post-war 30 years, but also to the whole period of the European history since the Renaissance. It is not just a regress, it is counter-progress. It is deliberate counter-progress. And during the last 30 years, we have been living in crisis. And this crisis, neoliberal counter-revolution, is man-made, it is artificial, or it has been artificial because it seems that at the beginning of the 21st century, the crisis began to come out of control of its masters, of the lords of the crisis rings. We can fix it indirectly in the conflicts of different segments of global elite, in the activities of their closed organizations, and in the statements of high functionaries. It is enough just to remember what Christine Lagarde was saying in October in Tokyo at the meeting of IMF and World Bank, and what was the essence of the report of Morgan Stanley Management in June last year. The guiding document of neoliberal counter-revolution was the report Crisis of Democracy, written at the request of the Trilateral Commission by Huntington, Crozier, and Watanuki in 1975. The document is very interesting. The authors wrote that the only cure for the evils of democracy is not more democracy, but the world and the United States today need a greater degree of moderation in democracy. The report argued that for a democratic political system to function effectively, it usually requires some measure of apathy and non-involvement on the part of some individuals and groups. They meant middle class and high, upper groups of the working class. The democratic surge was, it was saying in the report, a general challenge to existing systems of authority, public and private, and the main conclusion was a diminution of public influence is needed. So, in fact, this document was a reaction at the rise of middle class and working class due to industrialization of the 30 post-war years. The solution was very simple, deindustrialization. Deindustrialization of North Atlantic core and offensive against the middle class and working class. And we saw it in Thatcherism and Reaganomics. The industrialization of the West, which began in the 1980s, ideologically has been under preparation for a long period of time, since the 1860s in Great Britain. In the 50s and in the 60s of the 20th century, it was added to it ecology movement. Ecology movement of the 60s was organized by Rockefeller Foundation, and it was paving the way for future deindustrialization. The same role was played by youth culture and different minorities movement, and of course by derationalization of thinking and behavior. The 80s saw the rise of irrational cults, deterioration of mass and high education, and of course, supplanting of science fiction by fantasy. The Harry Potter series is very indicative example where we see future or picture of reality where is no democracy, where is hierarchy, and where the power is based on magic, not on rational choice. In fact, neoliberal counter-revolution, which organized redistribution of income in favor of dominant groups and at the expense of middle class and working class, was part of much greater geohistoric project, or plot, as you wish, the project to stop history. Because redistribution of income and de-democratization of society demanded civilizational U-turn, which I called the 3D. Deindustrialization, derationalization, and depopulation. This last plays an important role, not only from economic point of view or from the resource point of view. It is much easier to control 2 billion people than 7 or 8 billion people. Depopulation project is financed by the same structures which finance ecology movement, etc. Neoliberal counter-revolution was a crisis in itself, but it was intended to be ruled, governed crisis. Yet, in the beginning of the 21st century, the process seems to come out of control, as I said. Hegel used to call such situation perfidy of history. So we have double crisis, man-made and being planned, and a new crisis, a chaotic one. To deal with the crisis, one has to have will and reason, or rather, first, reason to understand, and second, the will to put reason into action. In our case, reason is social science, but the problem is that social science, in its present condition, is not adequate to the challenges of our epoch. Its main agent of social science is expert who knows more and more about less and less. There is a deterioration of knowledge. Knowledge is becoming more and more empiric, statistical case studies without theory, without scientific imagination, and so on. Firstly, the disciplinary net of the late 19th century, which is our inheritance from the 19th century, economy, sociology, and political science, in fact, doesn't catch social reality as a whole, only parts of it. Basic unit of analysis of sociology is civil society, but if it is shrinking, it means that sociology can tell us less and less about the world we live and the world we enter. Fernand Braudel used to say, "Capitalism, c'est l'ennemi du marché." Capitalism is enemy of the market. Rather, capitalism is balance between monopoly and market. But now we can see that transnational corporate monopolization is pushing market away. I would like to remind you about the research by Andy Coghlan and Deborah McKenzie, placed in October 2011 at the site of the New Scientists. This group of scholars showed that 147 companies, 1% of all, control 40% of world economy, and it is very indicative. This means that modern economy, whose basic unit of analysis is market, conceals more than it shows. Politics and nation state are fading away, And this means that political science, with its basic units of analysis, politics and state, cannot adequately not only to conceptualize but just depict real power relations, especially on global level. Secondly, there is one more serious problem with political science. Real power is usually secret or semi-secret shadow power. Conventional political science has neither concepts nor methods to analyze this type of power. The more democratic was becoming the facade of the Western societies in the 19th and 20th century, the less real power it had. This power was channelized in closed clubs, supranational structures, etc. What I'm saying is banal and trivial, but political science in its present condition cannot analyze real power relations. Integration of these structures as objects of as units of analysis in conventional political science will in fact blow it up. So a new social science is needed, studying real world and not that which professor scholarship fixes as real. A new social science with new disciplines, new concepts. Social force, which will be able to create such new type of scholarship, have best chances to win 21st century, or at least to undermine attempts to cut us from our European legacy. It is evident that new scholarship can be created only by structures of the new type. Which structures analyze reality today? First of all, scientific structures and analytical branches of secret services, but both are in deep crisis. Today we are witnessing crisis of both scientific structures and secret services of if it's their analytical branches. Scholarship appears not to be able to work with enormous volumes of information and feels awkward in the with analyzing informational streams. The gap between informational streams, including professional ones, and standard level of standard scholar is growing. Instead of scholars, as I said, we have experts who know more and more about less and less. The whole picture reminds the situation of scholasticism at the end of the 15th century. Miniaturization of research, case studies, and no universal lexicon between different spheres of knowledge. As for analytical branches of secret services, they seem to be unable to work in the world where almost all significant information can be found in open sources. And this transforms the whole business. So there is need to create, in principle, new structures. I prefer to call them cognitive intelligence structures. They must combine the best features of scholarship structures and those of secret societies. Like the last ones, they must analyze real world, not imagined one, paying attention onto the sum of indirect evidence, because social science usually neglects indirect evidence, which are very important. At the same time, like scholarship, it must concentrate on the laws and regularities of mass processes. Such structures must be not only analytical units, but also organizational weapons in the struggle for the future. I understand very well that it is much easier to pronounce such things than to create really these organizations. But one must try. Thank you.